everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and welcome to our final show of 2013. It's our annual show on the overrated, the underrated, and the ugly movies of the year. So, of course, I'm joined by JB.
And I'm trying an experiment this year. Last night, I got roaring drunk for the express purpose of having a hangover right now. So I'm horribly hungover, because if you think about it, this show is about the hangover from 2013. See what I did there?
I do. I see what you did. I
could barf at any time.
Next from week, our plan is to do our best of show, so make sure you tune into that. But this week, we're talking about the rest of the stuff that we liked, didn't like, wanted to like more, liked more than other people.
We're going to talk about one thing that isn't even a movie.
You should go visit our website at fthismovie.net, and you should follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie, and you can like us on Facebook, or you could email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com, or find us in the iTunes store by searching fthismovie. And if you like our show, you can always leave positive feedback or a review. Every little bit helps. We're going to forego our usual what have you seen lately, even though we were just talking about the fact that that's a shame, because we've both seen a ton of stuff in the last month.
I believe you said shit ton.
I believe I did.
And to start this on an up note,
yes.
Because to do a little promotion for next week's show, I thought this was a really good year in movies. I think you would quibble with that.
No, I actually wouldn't. I think it rallied in the last third. I thought a lot of good stuff came out, and there's a ton of stuff that I have liked a lot. I don't know if there's a single movie, though, that I love.
I think there was a lot to love, and okay. All of these films, these underrated films, I would suggest are films that we can love. And maybe we should define underrated, because I'm looking at my list.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that maybe not all of these were underrated.
Well, sometimes we use different criteria.
Maybe they're underrated because my definition is they were so much better than I expected them to be.
Well, that's fine. That's underrated. So if we have weird criteria for why we're calling something underrated / overrated, we will explain it.
But this film was underrated because it was warm and furry.
What's your first pick?
Don't ask.
For an underrated movie?
My first pick was Philomena. And I think the reason why it's underrated is, and this has kind of been bubbling under the website all year long, that it will come up and people will comment on it, and then it'll go away, and then it'll bubble up, people comment on it. How much you should know about a movie before you go see it?
Yeah.
I literally knew nothing.
I know the title and the two actors.
I knew that Steve Coogan and Judi Dench were in a car.
The car I didn't even know.
And I actually went in thinking it was a comedy.
Okay.
On the order of the guilt trip.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Okay.
Parts of it are funny, but in a very sad, knowing way. It's one of the films I most enjoyed, maybe because I went in knowing nothing.
Right.
It's based on a newspaper story that garnered a lot of attention in England about women who were sent to this convent in Ireland to have their babies, and then they were basically slave labor for the nuns. And then the nuns, proving that they were really angels of God, sold the children to rich American families. Because nothing says Christianity like slavery and selling children. So Judi Dench was one of these unfortunate women, and on the eve of her son's birthday starts to wonder about him, and through a series of circumstances gets hooked up with the Steve Coogan character, who until recently was the mouthpiece for the English government, and there's a scandal and he gets kicked out, and so he's thinking about going back into journalism, and this is the story he's going to use.
Oh, okay.
So he approaches it playing, I think, the character that's now become the Steve Coogan
right.
character,
right.
the too smart for his own good douchebag.
Right.
And in the course of the story, and Coogan co-wrote the script, it's kind of amazing. It's actually about something. It doesn't hit you over the head. It's really funny sometimes. At other times, it's the most horrendous
right.
tragedy you can
right.
think of. But as we've talked about innumerable times, isn't it amazing when a movie is more than just one thing? That it could be this, and it could be
right.
this. And Dench is never bad. And Coogan's kind of amazing playing someone we really don't like at the beginning. the biggest surprise of the year.
Wow. All right. I knew nothing about it and kind of was avoiding it. And this is wrong of me, but sometimes I see Judi Dench in a movie and I think it's the exotic Marigold Hotel, you know?
Right. But one of the things I liked about Philomena was one of the themes is class, that the Coogan character is used to very nice things and Judi Dench is poor. And the film does a really nice job. Again, not hitting you over the head.
Right.
It's just a sub theme, but it keeps coming up that there's this class divide between the two of them.
Yeah.
I recommend it to everyone.
All right. My first underrated pick is about 180 degrees in the other direction, and that is The Last Stand, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. It came out last January. It was his sort of comeback movie after spending 8 years or whatever he spent as the governor of California, and no one went to see it. I'm obviously a big Arnold Schwarzenegger fan. I'm a big action movie fan, and this was a year that a lot of action movies came out. Schwarzenegger had a couple. Stallone had a couple. They had one together. Bruce Willis played John McClane again. Almost all of them were bad, and this movie got sort of lumped in with the other bad ones. And there's not, it's not perfect. There's some terrible stuff in it, but I think it's a really fun sort of modernized Western with Schwarzenegger playing the sheriff of this small town. It's the English language debut of Kim Ji-woon, who made I Saw the Devil and a bunch of kick-ass movies. So, you know, it looks great and it has this great kinetic energy. I had a ton of fun with it and I wish that it had gotten a better reception. I wish its reputation was better. I wish more people had gone to see it.
And that's the reason I wanted to see it. I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Although later I saw Escape Hatch.
Escape Plan.
I insist on calling it Escape Hatch, because then you have Escape Hatch, Grudge Match,
oh,
and they rhyme.
I like that.
I saw the trailer for The Last Stand way too many times.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, at first I thought this looks like a Walter Hill film, and then I talked myself into thinking that Walter Hill had directed it. But I wanted
to see Walter Hill made Bullet to the Head with Stallone, which came out a month later.
Which is probably why I'm old now, and I'm just hopelessly confused, and I need Patrick to correct me on all these things. You saying that makes me want to see it, and I'm guessing it'll be on cable soon.
I'm sure, yeah. Again, there's some, it's kind of three movies, and two of them are actually kind of bad, but all the Schwarzenegger stuff redeems the movie.
And then some of my underrated picks are based on my farcical idea of how much money the movie made.
Okay.
Because I wasn't aware of it being popular. I don't think it's popular, and you're much better at the box office statistics, so you might just lay waste to some of these thoughts of these films being underrated.
Okay.
I thought Frozen was underrated.
Okay.
Now, has Frozen made a lot of money?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. The kids were going to see Frozen when I wasn't seeing Frozen.
Right.
So because I saw Frozen in a literally empty movie theater. And it wasn't like I was going at a strange time, especially for kids who usually go earlier.
Right.
I just assumed it wasn't doing business because I was not going to go see Frozen because I had been convinced over months that it was about a snowman and a reindeer. And then you had that revelatory review where it was like, oh, no, they
right.
just... Again, the marketing people, your job is to market the film that they made. Not make it into a film that's easier for you to market.
Right.
Your review was splendiferous. It is a return to the early glories of Disney. It was just, why can't you sell a movie about two sisters? Because
right.
then boys won't
right.
go?
I'm sure, yeah.
The songs were good.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time, the comic relief was just that, that it was a little here and there,
right.
but the story of the sisters was very touching and very true to life and sort of amazing. So I consider it underrated because it's not the movie they were selling.
Sure. Interestingly enough, I was at the movies a couple times this weekend, and we're recording this sort of over that weekend between Christmas and New Year's. So everybody's off work. Everybody's got their kids. Everybody was seeing Frozen. It was in those big theaters in the middle, and there were mobs of people all seeing. And I don't know if they had not seen it yet, or if people were going back for a second time. Frozen made a bunch of money this weekend, and it's one of the few Disney movies, at least in recent memory, that I have a baby daughter, And I'm kind of excited about her seeing that movie instead of some of the other Disney princess movies that are very much about, oh, I need a boy to rescue me. And this movie isn't that.
And this is, yeah, it's yay for, and I was almost going to say entitled, yay for empowered heroines. Strange thing happened when we went to see Wolf of Wall Street. We went at a weird time, and it was in one of the smaller theaters. And when we got out, we walked out, and there's all these kids and parents waiting. And I look up on the little light-up sign above the door, and Frozen is the next screening. And I'm like, I wasn't aware that they juggled these very much. It seems odd.
Yeah.
But then my son, God bless him, put his finger on it. In the early afternoon, adults are less likely to see it. And so Frozen's in the big theater, Wolf of Wall Street's in the little one, and then they switch, because later on, the kiddie audience goes down and more people want to see Wolf.
Yeah.
But there were all of these little tots hungry for entertainment, waiting as we left, and I just thought, oh, they're going to see something. They're going to see something really good.
I guess sticking with your theme, I'll jump to another underrated pick for me, which was Monsters University, which came out over the summer, and again, made a bunch of money. I don't think it was a box office failure, but it was very much written off as sort of throwaway Pixar. They just keep sequelizing themselves, and why, you know, it got thrown in with, like, Cars 2. And I think it's way better than that. I thought it was really funny. I thought it worked as sort of one of those college comedies, you know, obviously starting with Animal House. There's a lot of jokes sort of in that vein, but then there's, it being Pixar, I think there are some interesting messages for kids, especially towards the end of the movie, and I think it found a way around some of the issues that I have with prequels, which is that it's going to spend 2 hours getting you to the place where we know it has to go because of where the next movie starts, but I thought it found some interesting ways around that. And I thought it was a much, much better movie than the overall reception seemed to give it credit for being.
And I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, that's okay. I think it's good.
I'm without small children. My next underrated film may not be considered an underrated film at all, but I thought it was underrated because I went in expecting less than nothing.
Okay.
I went in expecting to be disappointed by a couple of guys who had disappointed me pretty consistently along the way, and now it's one of my favorite films of the year. This is the End.
Oh, sure.
Could have gone bad in so many ways. And one of the things I like about This is the End is that there is a significant amount of time spent talking about those other films that they've made.
Right.
Where it's almost like this one's the make good. Like, we know you got burned by Your Highness and maybe some of those other films.
I kind of like Your Highness.
Your Highness is really weird.
It is.
I mean, it's like two things that don't work together, and they try real hard.
Yeah, but that's kind of why I like it. It's one of those movies that, oh, this shouldn't exist, but it does.
And they acknowledge that, because at one point they're talking about doing a sequel to Pineapple Express.
Right.
Which made a lot of money, I'm guessing. And then someone says it's a throwaway line, why don't we make a sequel to Your Highness? And then there's silence. But the other thing I think is interesting about This is the End is that when they're pitching concepts for the Pineapple Express sequel, everything they pitch winds up happening in This is the End.
Oh, really?
Did you notice that?
I haven't seen the movie since opening day.
I got this new TV, which I'm sort of obsessed with. And I noticed that if the film was made recently and shot digitally, it looks really good on the new TV. So for a while, I was looking at This is the End, like, to really groove out on the improved clarity. And every time I put in This is the End, I watched it again. I believe I've seen This is the End 5 times now. And much like its brother in theme, The World's End, boy, there's a lot of little hidden jokes and...
Okay.
It rewards repeat viewings.
I like that.
Now, This is the End made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing most critics liked it.
I think so.
But I'm just considering it underrated because I went in with very low expectations.
Right.
And, man, imagine when you try.
I'm probably speaking out of turn, but I think of sort of the outright comedy. I think it's the funniest movie I saw this year. I think. All right, next I'll go with another weird little genre movie. Adam Riske was beating the drum for this movie back in January when it came out and was mocked and no one went to see it. It took me several months to see it, then I saw it and really liked it, and now I've been championing it. And slowly over the course of the year, people have been seeing it on our website and saying, yeah, I finally saw this. It was really fun. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, which was, again, sort of mocked and derided when it came out in January, like, this stupid thing, why would they try and sort of modernize Hansel and Gretel, and why are they trying to combine these two things? I was amazed, going back and reading the reviews, that so few critics were able to recognize that the movie knew exactly what it was, and was exactly what it wanted to be. And it's very much sort of a companion piece to Army of Darkness. It has that same kind of energy, that same kind of humor. It feels like a throwback to old Sam Raimi. There's a lot of just really good gags in it. I'm not always a fan of, like, sort of the anachronistic joke, but I like the wooden milk bottles with children's faces carved on them. Hansel has developed diabetes from all the sugar that the witch fed him when he was a kid. They just call it the sugar sickness, but there's a lot of good jokes in it, a lot of really fun kind of gore. I think it's such a fun movie, and I'm amazed that so many people wrote it off as being stupid.
I think I'm going to wind up having not seen any of your underrated films, which actually contributes to your argument that they're underrated. I think Hansel and Gretel got lost in all of that fairy tale nonsense.
Yeah. There's been too many of them lately.
But I remember seeing the trailer innumerable times and thinking that it looked like goofy fun.
It is exactly that. Very entertaining.
Okay, let's lump these two together.
Okay.
And I think one of them made money and one of them didn't. I'm not aware of what the critics thought of them. Again, like, this is the end. What I received was so much more than what I was expecting. Riddick and the Wolverine.
Okay, yes.
I thought Riddick was kind of amazing.
Riddick is on my list as well.
And that you had this 20-25 minute sequence at the beginning that was almost like a short story.
Yeah.
And again, much like the first 15 minutes of Indiana Jones, was actually using that as exposition. That teaches us exactly who Riddick is for the rest of the movie. And then it becomes something completely different. And I'm never against that. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So that was great. And the Wolverine, I believe about a year ago we discussed this, that earlier Wolverine movie I saw with you.
Yes.
And then months later, couldn't remember seeing. I didn't think I had seen it.
That's correct.
Which shows you how good that was. And this might have been you, but I'm not sure. It was someone on this movie who suggested that what they did right with the Wolverine, besides basing the story, I guess, on one of the more famous comic book stories, was they're using the James Bond template.
Yeah.
And I don't think that template ever fails. But I'm not the biggest comic book movie fan, and I'm certainly not the biggest Wolverine fan, but I thought Wolverine was 2 hours of this is why we go to the movie.
Yeah, I really liked it. And again, like you, went into it kind of dreading it.
Yeah.
The trailers were so bad. The last movie had been
once
so bad.
Once bitten, twice shy.
We've been Wolverined and X-Men'd out.
Well, consider this, that the trailer really withheld some stuff.
Yeah.
Because in the wrong hands, the trailer would have been full of the train chase.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if there were any of that.
Yeah, there's one or two shots. And in the trailer, it was kind of laughable. And then in the movie, it's actually a really cool sequence. So.
It's one of those chase sequences, and I think I've said this before, where the director and all the people involved get into the physics of the thing.
Right.
I mean, I hated the Lone Ranger, but at least you had to give them credit for that train chase.
Right.
That things have weight, and I always compare it to Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
That the physics of it work, and the idea of Wolverine being able to stop by plunging his claws into the metal of the train. That was terrific. If you're looking for some good action over the next couple months, and you haven't seen it yet, Riddick and the Wolverine.
Yeah, the Wolverine was such a pleasant surprise, and Riddick is just the kind of really good B-movie that they don't really make anymore. Kind of low budget, definitely sort of more focused on one character, felt very much sort of from the 80s. My only disappointment, and like you, I really love that whole opening sequence, which is mostly silent.
I was starting to think that was going to be the whole movie.
That would have been cool, right? Yeah. My only complaint there is that some things come up during that sequence where Riddick is learning sort of how to survive. And I wish some of those things would have come up again later in the movie. Like, oh, this bad guy gets killed because he doesn't know the thing that Riddick learned. But most of it seems forgotten, which, whatever. Yeah, Riddick is on my list as well. I will switch to a documentary called Rewind This, which was a very small documentary about the rise and fall of VHS. But it's actually about more than that. It's about why we collect things and why we movie fans love certain things and what makes us movie fans. It got a very small, I guess, VOD release. It's available on iTunes if you want to see it. There was another VHS documentary that came out called Adjust Your Tracking. I still haven't seen it. It's screened at some of the conventions that we've gone to, but I've never been in to see it. My fear going into Rewind This, and even in the first couple minutes when they interview somebody with a very specific hipster mustache, my fear was that it was going to be 2 hours of hipsters sort of ironically collecting a dead technology, because doesn't that make them cool? But the movie stops being that very, very quickly, and really kind of, again, just spoke to me as somebody who loves movies, and especially some of the oddball movies that they talk about.
And this is one I've seen, and I believe I saw it on your recommendation. I saw it on Netflix, and it's amazing. And I think one of the reasons why it's amazing, I think, Patrick, I think you can get into this. When VHS was invented, when VHS came out, I mean, I can still remember my first friend who got one, because his family was well-to-do, and those things were expensive, and they looked like tanks. And one year, instead of going to the turnabout dance, we took our lovely ladies out to dinner and then went back to his house and watched The Godfather on VHS. And I can still remember that night thinking, you can watch this whenever you want. You can run it back and watch something again. It's not edited. There's the language and the violence and the nudity.
Right.
And in a very real way, this is what I tell my students now about Netflix. If VHS had been invented a little earlier, I never would have gone to school. That's what I would have done. I would have become worse than the guys in Rewind This.
Yeah.
So Patrick's right. It is about VHS, but it's also about obsession.
Yeah.
In a very real way. Very much worth your time. And I have a documentary that was very underrated. For some reason, the restaurant-type theater by our house that Patrick's very familiar with it, got it for about a week.
Yeah, that was random.
And, I don't have to drive into the city to see a documentary. So, and I like the food there. So we go, and I think I told this on a previous podcast. We had some people who weren't quite clear on the concept and did their best to ruin the movie for half an hour. But the movie was good enough to resist this, like a bad kidney. And it's called 20 Feet from Stardom, and it's about backup singers in the hurly-burly world of rock and roll. And the documentarians took such a different tactic than you'd think, or that every other documentary has taken. Lengthy interviews where people actually tell interesting stories. But the part I like the most is a lot of music, to the extent, spoiler alert, they get the people back in the studio to sing. And at the end, there's this big sort of musical number with all the backup singers together.
Yeah.
Which is why I think this theater got it, because it's like, well, it's not really a documentary. Right, it's more like a concert movie.
Right.
The amount of music really works, though, because they're making a very specific point about what these people added. And you should look no further than the scene where Mary Clayton talks in very specific terms about recording that earth-shattering background vocal she does on Give Me Shelter, that it can still, you know, make your hair stand up on the back of your neck. One of the best documentaries I've seen this year.
Cool. I have not seen
it. And I don't think anyone saw it.
Yeah.
Some drunks saw it accidentally.
I tried in an early version of this list to put Oblivion on the list because I saw Oblivion back in April, thought it was okay. And then the year went on and the summer was filled with disappointments and Oblivion started to look better and better because it was like, well, it wasn't this and it wasn't this. And at least it didn't kill thousands of people for no good reason. So then the other night I went back and tried to rewatch Oblivion just to see if it belongs on the list, and it doesn't really. I kind of was right about Oblivion the first time. Oblivion's fine.
But you liked Andrea Riseborough.
Yes, very much so.
And what has she done besides Oblivion?
That other horrible movie that you saw with Clive Owen?
Which is one of my worst movies of the year. But how... I did not see Oblivion.
Yeah.
So how did I learn who she was? Because I went to Shadow Dancer because she was in it.
I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of that I've seen her in.
She's a very good actress.
Yeah, she's really good in Oblivion. So I will go with a movie called It's a Disaster, which is also sort of about the end of the world. It's about a group of friends that get together for brunch, like they do every week, except this time, as they're getting together for brunch, the apocalypse is happening outside. It's a comedy. David Cross plays sort of the straight man. Julia Stiles is in it. America Ferrara. It's very funny. It's very well observed. And you realize that you could sort of watch a movie about these people without the apocalypse element, but that makes it so much funnier because it puts all of their bullshit into perspective. And it has one of my favorite punchlines of any movie this year. I believe, as of this recording, it's available on Netflix Instant. You guys should check it out.
And I passed up innumerable opportunities because you went to the patio, right?
I did not. I saw it on demand, but it did play at the patio for a week.
Yeah, and multiple screenings.
Yeah.
And we're very sad because the patio looks, they can't quite figure out what to do. And we certainly hope the patio reopens soon.
Yeah.
Three comedies that I thought were underrated. I think one of them made a lot of money. I'm pretty sure the other two didn't. But again, in the spirit of what I was talking about before, all of these films were so much better than I expected, although I think there's one that you didn't quite like. Frances Ha. Since I saw it, I've been championing it. It came out on a Criterion disc, and I've since seen it again, and I know Adam had said that it was growing on him. I originally liked it because I thought it gave me some insight into my son's generation and kind of what young people are going through at that stage after college where you're putting your life together.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, the more I see it, the more I think, again, that it's about a lot of things, and it does it really well. And between Frances Ha and Nebraska, I'm beginning to think I will go to any movie that has beautiful black and white cinematography.
And yet, I know Frances Ha was not shot black and white. I don't know if Nebraska was.
You're kidding.
No, Frances Ha was, I believe, converted digitally to black and white.
That amazes me.
Yeah.
Although, of the two, and maybe it's because Nebraska is clear in my mind because I just saw it a couple days ago. The cinematography in Nebraska is just breathtaking.
Yeah.
I love black and white. The other one is Enough Said.
Okay.
Which I really, really liked.
Yeah.
And then I think you had written a column or you had made a comment on it after you had saw it. And I agree with you that... it doesn't need the situation comedy nonsense.
No.
It doesn't need that at all. That why can't we just have a film where these two people meet and given their age and their previous experience with romance, it's a little rocky, but they eventually wind up together and you need that to sell it to a studio? There's this hilarious hijinks. Imagine if you were the masseuse of his ex-wife. I mean, it's nonsense.
It's very shocking because without all that stuff, I really love the movie. I really love all the stuff between Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini, and they're both really good. And Nicole Holofcener is a filmmaker I really, really love.
Yeah.
And in the past has avoided doing exactly that sort of thing.
But again, I get the feeling that that's what got it made.
Maybe.
Because, that's something. But I'm just thinking of the scene. I think it's their first date where she comes over in the morning for, like, breakfast or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That entire scene is just, that's why we go to Nicole Holofcener movies.
There's a scene in Please Give, which is a movie I really love. Oliver Platt is kind of having an affair. He's married to Catherine Keener. He's having an affair. They have a conversation in the street. He walks away and maybe goes a direction that she didn't think he was going to go. And she kind of looks at him for a second and you think, oh shit, here comes this beat where she follows him and finds out he's cheating. And then they have it out and then we got to do this and this. No, she kind of looks for a second and then continues on. And it's like, oh my God, Nicole Holofcener, you just avoided making the mistake of every other movie. And so it was particularly disappointing to see enough said, fall into some of those traps. I still liked the movie.
And I agree that Please Give is a much better movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene in Please Give where they take the moms to see the fall colors.
Yeah.
And one of the moms is just horrible.
Yeah.
And is starting to suffer from dementia. And so the three of them wind up looking at it, and the horrible mother isn't facing in the right direction, and Rebecca Hall doesn't tell her to turn around.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like Enough Said, and I liked Frances Ha, although not as much as you. And Frances Ha showed up on a ton of 10 best lists.
And she got a Golden Globe nomination.
And she's great. She's always great.
Is something.
And it has, I know I just said this about It's a Disaster, Frances Ha also has one of my favorite punchlines of any movie this year. It's the little address tag in her mailbox.
The other thing I think that was affecting me when I watched Enough Said is that you get the James Gandolfini regret throughout the whole film.
Right.
But what he's playing in that, I think someone on the website said, consider his character in True Romance.
Right.
And consider his character in Enough Said.
Yeah, that was Adam.
That, man, the guy had range.
Yeah.
And the third comedy was, and I saw this with your lovely wife.
Oh.
The Heat.
Yes.
And I was expecting, because I had seen that trailer, I could recite it for you.
Yeah.
And, oh, is it going to have all the beats? And, oh, she's fat and she's thin. And those are gonna be and there is a lot of that.
Sure.
But there's also some other stuff, like all the stuff about her crazy Irish family with Bill Burr in the background and stuff. And there's this very sentimental moment at the end that I think the film earns and sticks and says something about relationships between women, which we don't get a lot of movies about because, you know, what man wants to see that? But it reminded me, isn't there a similar scene in Bridesmaids where Melissa McCarthy calls out Kristen Wiig and says, I'm trying to be your friend here.
Right.
And that's one of the things, like the cupcake scene, that we like more than women shitting in the street.
Yeah, The Heat, just like Bridesmaids, is very messy. It's kind of sloppy. It's way too long. It's barely concerned with its own plot. But there's all this other stuff in the corners that's really good and interesting or funny and very much worth your time.
So like Bridesmaids, it's half an indie film fighting desperately for dominance with this other thing.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot to like in The Heat. I would call that underrated because I, too, had very low expectations.
And I'm not the biggest fan of Miss Bullock.
Sure.
And I thought she was good.
She was good. I'll lump my last two together just because I would say they're underrated, not because people didn't like them, but because people probably didn't see them. One is a movie called Bounty Killer, and one is a movie called The Dirties. And both of these I actually reviewed at fthismovie.net. Bounty Killer barely got a theatrical release. It played for a week at Streets of Woodfield, which is how I saw it. But it also played video on demand. It's currently available on Netflix Instant. It's, you know, there have been so many in the years since Grindhouse sort of fake exploitation movies. And this certainly falls into one of those, is one of those. But it has so much energy and so much invention. It was made for about $1 million in a very short amount of time. And boy, is the money on the screen. You would swear this movie cost at least $10 million. It's a ton of fun. It has a really fun performance by the lead actress playing a character named Mary Death. I had a blast with it. And The Dirties is very much in the other direction. It's a Canadian film, sort of a found footage thing about two high school kids who are picked on as they try and make their own movie. And it goes to some dark places, but I think it earns it. And it says some really interesting things about our relationship to movies and to movie violence. And I won't say much more than that, but very much worth your time.
This is giving me a wonderful list of films to see when it's below zero in February and I don't want to leave the house.
Yeah.
Two more underrated films.
Yes.
And I think one of them has been thoroughly exhausted on the F This Movie website, podcast, religion, cult.
Okay.
But I did want to give it one final shout out for 2013. That I still think it exists as an underrated film. Lords of Salem.
Sure, yes.
Which apparently no one saw in favor of Rob Zombie's earlier films that no one saw. But as he said, you're more familiar with them, so now it's your favorite.
Right.
And also the film Mud,
Okay.
Which, in my opinion, sort of came and went, and it didn't get a lot of attention, and now Dallas Buyers Club is getting all the attention.
I'm kind of amazed when I see that show up on 10 best lists.
And Mud is the film that should.
I liked Mud. I only saw it a couple weeks ago. I did not love Mud. Maybe we could talk about it after the podcast, because I feel like maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's more to it that I'm not
getting. I
thought
it was the film this year that I saw that was the most like a novel.
Okay.
I'm much more taken with him getting the children under his spell. I'm much more in love with the first 45 minutes than the second 45 minutes. The minute Reese Witherspoon enters the film, it sort of becomes this other thing.
Which is true of every Reese Witherspoon movie.
But I thought for the first 45 minutes, it seemed to me to be very much in the vein of A To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, all that stuff, it sets up sort of a sense of place. You have these very well-defined characters. I thought it was really smart about the way that it treated the kids.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's like people shooting. And
that what it's really about is how these experiences affect these kids.
Right.
And at the end, the last half hour, like you said, it gleefully throws away right. that conceit. It's as if
it's a shootout
at the end of To Kill a Mockingbird when what's his name? The evil. Hold on, it'll come to me. That at the end, when Boo Radley protects Scout from the attack. From the racist guy,
right?
He whips out a machine gun and kills their whole family.
Right.
If To Kill a Mockingbird ended that way, but I agree that was a misstep. But I thought there was a lot to like in Mud. So look at the underrated films.
That's a bunch, man.
You now have in front of you. Now we're gonna get negative, negative. What everyone loves. Let's shit on things.
I find that I've lost my taste for doing some of the overrated stuff, because I just feel like as soon as you're saying something's overrated, you're just telling other people they're wrong if they like it.
But that's what I am saying.
So I don't want to do that. I picked a couple of movies that I just feel like, hey, everybody liked this but me. So I'm not suggesting they're wrong. I'm suggesting maybe I am.
Okay, well then maybe that's a way for you to salve your conscience, but I agree, because I know one of the films I want to talk about, apparently everyone loved it a whole lot, and I'm the odd man out.
Do you want to start with that? Because it's probably the same movie I have.
That would be something, but I don't think it is.
Okay.
I cannot tell you how much I wanted to like this film.
Okay.
And there's things in it
I know
that I like.
Okay.
But I just... It's The Wolf of Wall Street.
Really?
I thought it was repetitive.
Okay.
I thought everything in it that was good was from a previous film that he had made.
Okay.
I thought it was the same scene over and over and over. And I understand that's part of the point, because we're talking about addiction here. I thought it was 2.5 hours of, can I finish my sentence? 2.5 hours of drugs out of someone's ass, and you can throw a dwarf, and look at all this. It's like Lifestyles of Rich and Famous. For this half an hour, you know, sort of comeuppance, which isn't a comeuppance, although one of my favorite things is when he said, and jail? I forgot. I was rich.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people like it so much, because to me, it was long and repetitious and unpleasant, and I actually thought DiCaprio's performance in Great Gatsby was better, because in this, I just think he's shouting.
I liked Wolf of Wall Street a lot. I liked it a real lot, and I wonder, I'm debating that right now, because some of what you're talking about is what I've complained about before with Casino.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I'm not having that reaction to Wolf of Wall Street yet, and maybe a year or two from now, I will. I really liked DiCaprio's performance. I think some of it has to do with the fact that it's been a couple of years for me since I saw a Scorsese movie that was like, oh, right, this is what it is.
And I know my son's reaction was, it was nice to see him doing this again instead of children's movies.
I mind children's movies.
I have a warm spot in my heart for Hugo. There are things I liked. When DiCaprio gives one of his many pep talks,
yes,
you can see exactly how this started this toxic climate at the firm that led to all this other nonsense, the cheerleading. The scene where they take the old Quaaludes that don't kick in until it's far too late, both what he does on the phone and that whole sequence with the staircase, I thought was amazing.
Yes.
But after a while, it's just, and again, it's like listening to drunks tell you drunk stories, but all drunk stories are the same, and it's not the same because you're not drunk.
Yeah, I need some more time to think through some of my feelings about the movie, but I definitely liked it way more than you.
I thought Jonah Hill was funny.
He was. I thought everybody's good. The scene with him and Matthew McConaughey was one of my favorite scenes in a movie this year. Matthew McConaughey, I thought, was better in those 5 minutes than he was in all of Dallas Buyers Club.
And I give them a lot of credit for not going, like, using him as later in the film, oh, look what happened to your mentor.
Right.
That he's there and he does this amazing thing, which they obviously loved, because almost the whole scene is in the trailer.
Yeah, right. But he lays out the entire movie.
No, it's kind of incredible and weird, because he still hasn't gained back the weight from Dallas Buyers Club. But in a way, given what he's telling DiCaprio to do, you can see why he's getting the juice sucked out of him.
And the scene with Kyle Chandler, which I'm a little bit burned out on seeing Kyle Chandler play like the cop, the fed, the straight-laced guy, the Boy Scout. But the scene that he has with DiCaprio on the boat, I thought was so good. And I thought Kyle Chandler was so good in that scene, the way he sort of misdirects the conversation and then the way it turns. I was a big fan of the movie.
I will say this, and again, we're talking about it, and I'm coming up with all these things I like, so maybe I'm fooling myself.
Yeah.
I thought it was overlong and repetitious.
Sure.
And
it is, but I would argue to a point. And unpleasant, I would argue to a point as well.
And the film's attitude toward women is sort of disturbing. Although I was impressed. The woman who plays his second wife?
Yes. Whose name I don't know. She's an Australian woman.
That she is just stunningly, statuesquely beautiful, and clearly that's one of the things the film is portraying. But I was really impressed that they found someone that beautiful and Playboy model-like who can act.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she can actually act.
Yeah.
There's one short scene at the end of Wolf of Wall Street where they show Chandler going home on the subway.
Yes.
That I thought that he nailed. But that I gave Scorsese a lot of credit for, because I think that's in there, because we as the audience are supposed to think.
I think there's two ways you can read that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That he took this path, and it's the honest path, and he's going home, but there's certainly another way you can take it where the DiCaprio character directly addresses it.
Right.
That,
right.
Anyway, I thought that film was overrated.
Well, you're not alone, because that, you know, that awful cinema score thing, it has like a C. So as many people really love it as downright hate it. And again, I wonder how much of that is that I'm objecting to, some of the sort of raunchiness in the movie. And now there's this whole new thing where people are arguing that it glorifies, all of that behavior.
Well, that's the thing I thought. And Adam said that he saw it at midnight on Christmas Eve or something with a packed house full of college boys who he said were all getting the wrong message from the film.
Right. Is that the movie's fault?
When we walked out of the theater, this young man was doing the Matthew McConaughey chest thump for his friend, and it was obviously this was going to become a thing between them.
Again, the last shot of the movie, and I won't say what it is, I think addresses exactly that. I just think it's unfair to put that on the movie, because if we want the movie to really moralize and condemn what they're doing is wrong, then we're all going to sit around and be like, shut the fuck up, movie. Don't beat us over the head with it. Don't be that movie. So, whatever.
And one more thing.
Yes.
Because if anything, this conversation proves that it's worthwhile. That 3/4 of the way through, I'm honestly thinking, I am so happy for what I've earned, honestly.
Yes.
And I'm so fucking glad that I'm not that.
Yes.
So
none of that looked fun. Again, it's that opening shot of Spring Breakers with all the kids on the beach and with the dubstep and the slow motion booze. There are people who will watch that and think, boy, that looks like fun. That's where I want to be. And then there are people like me this is a nightmare. And that was all of Wolf of Wall Street. This is awful. All of this is a nightmare to me.
Quickly, what film did you think I was going
to bring up? Well, I'll bring it up because it sure makes me sound like an asshole. Here's the thing. It's a fine movie. I understand all of the praise it is getting. I just don't love 12 Years a Slave. And it makes me sound like an even bigger asshole because here's a movie that is about the horrors of slavery, and how dare I say, I'm not that good, because now it seems like I'm pro-slavery by not liking the movie. I thought the movie is fine. It's made well. The performances are good. I found some of the guest stars distracting. I just
feel like... And people keep telling me, well, it's that one man story. It's that one man story.
Right.
But I know one of your original objections was, and you can sort of encapsulate this, spoiler alert, when it's established who he is.
Yes.
And he gets the hell out of there. Fair, pretty, get on the cart. Yes. We're going.
Yes.
It's never suggested that he's leaving all these other people behind who are going to be fated to be in that position, and that's not addressed at all. So I guess the problem is that there was a black man who should not have been a slave who was treated like a slave, that's the inhumanity.
Right, and the more I've tried to figure out how I feel about this, and I've even read some things about it trying to understand, okay, people are saying this is a masterpiece. Right now I would say it's the front runner to win the Best Picture Oscar. And again, I'm fine with all of that, whatever. That some people have argued that the reason that it focuses on that one man is because he makes a better audience sort of surrogate or conduit because he's caught between both worlds. He's free, but he's black. He's a slave, but he's not supposed to be. So he doesn't necessarily fit in with either.
And I think the film is getting so much praise because it makes bleeding heart white liberals feel nice and guilty, and makes the white characters in the film are a horror show of different types, except for Brad Pitt, who produced the film. I will give you this. There's a scene, and I don't think this is a spoiler alert, it's about halfway through, where it looks like our hero is going to be lynched, but instead of hanging him, he's sort of left hanging and his feet can reach the ground for an intolerably long amount of time. I thought that scene was amazing. The assuredness of the director to let it go on for what felt like real time. I thought that scene was good.
If the purpose of the movie is to depict, you know, some of the horrors of slavery, then job well done. I'm not suggesting anyone is wrong for thinking the movie is a masterpiece. I just think it was lost a little bit on me.
So we've established that 12 Years a Slave is overrated and that Patrick is a racist. But I think you see the same syndrome in my next overrated film, which is Dallas Buyers Club, which I had read so much about, and maybe that was the problem. I read a boatload about this film that I went into it thinking, this is going to be one of the greatest films of the year. And while I agree his performance is something to see, and that his performance is really the best thing in the film itself, I felt, was not that great.
I agree with that 100%. It's sort of formulaic, and then when it tries not to be, it's sort of show-offy. And the movie came out and failed to make much of an impact. Leading up to it, it was, this is going to be one of the best movies of the year. This is a front-runner for the Oscars.
This is the McConaughey's awards performance.
And then nothing. And so maybe that's why it's even more jarring now when I see people put it on their 10 best list.
And there's another connection between Dallas Buyers Club and 12 Years a Slave, that in the same breath that someone might say, well, he was a free man and he became a slave and that's our way in, that Dallas Buyers Club has this protagonist that's one of the straightest men you've ever seen, and that it deals with his conversion, and so that's our way in.
Did you know he didn't even ride in the rodeo? Which is a whole, like, metaphor that they use a lot in the movie. He never rode in the rodeo.
You know, now that you bring that up, Slate, which continues to be one of my favorite websites, often will run a column after a film comes out.
Like fact-checking?
Fact-checking the film.
Yeah.
And besides the fact that McConaughey didn't ride in the rodeo, the Jared Leto character doesn't exist.
Right.
So that's...
It's one of those movies with a lot of composites. Yeah, I think the movie is really kind of ordinary in every way that isn't the Matthew McConaughey performance.
And speaking of... I'm going out of turn now.
Please.
Speaking of big disappointments, I can't remember wanting to see a film more. And maybe, like... Christian Bale says in American Hustle, you know what you do? You say no. people can't deal with no. It just makes them want it more. It was so hard to see for a little while, and then some of my friends saw it and loved it, and then it was hard to see. Escape from Tomorrow.
Ah, I still haven't seen it.
I was looking forward to that film being the second coming of Christ.
Yeah.
If only because at a certain point in my life, I went to Disney a lot. So The Dark Side of Disney, filmed guerrilla style by a bunch of independent filmmakers, the film is a mess. I applaud the fact that they were able to do this with cell phones and surreptitiously doing it, but the film never understands or knows what it wants to be.
Yeah.
It starts out one way, it becomes this weird conspiracy theory where under Disney all this stuff is happening. And then at the end, there's this cop-out, well, it's abstract, so we don't have any responsibility artistically for the previous 90 minutes. Because I've been to Disney so many times, I could take Escape from Tomorrow and make it into something.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where they ride It's a Small World that hints at what the whole movie could have been, but it's just like, let's throw everything against the wall and see what sticks.
Right. My next pick is The Place Beyond the Pines, which is a movie that I liked a lot of. I don't think it's a bad movie. I just think it's kind of a mess and one that doesn't necessarily get credit for being a mess. It's a movie that's broken up into thirds.
It's one third of a great movie.
The first third is fantastic.
Yeah.
The second third is pretty good. And then the last third, I feel like, pisses everything away.
Well, the last third is, you're telling me that was all for this? It's like a Shaggy Dog story.
Kind of, yeah.
And that's how our children met.
Again, right. And if you're going to do this, I think I've said this before, maybe even on the podcast, but it essentially comes down to two kids sitting together in a cafeteria. And if you really want your movie to build to that moment, the movie just didn't earn it and then didn't even know what to do from there. Lots of good stuff in it, some good performances, some really great scenes and sequences. But overall, I felt it's a movie that the air kind of lets out of it very slowly. It's this upside down triangle where it starts great and then it just...
They should have expanded the first third.
Yeah.
And have it end, have the movie end with his stand.
Yeah.
That would have made it a little bit like Taxi Driver, but that would have been a better film.
Yeah.
Have we exhausted discussing Man of Steel?
Yeah, and I did write it on here, but again, it's such a polarizing movie that I don't even know if we can call it overrated. Some people love it, some people hate it, a lot of people put it on the worst of lists. I think that's ridiculous, and I didn't really like it all that much, but it's certainly
like it.
Not one of the worst movies of the year.
But every time I go back to it in my memory, it becomes worse. So I'm not, like I just did with Wolf of Wall Street,
right. Sort
of fondly remembering the parts that I liked. My memory of it is nothing but gray, senseless violence.
Yeah, I again, I'm not a fan, but as many people don't like it as do. But in keeping with the sort of blockbusters, I chose World War Z, which I know you liked more than I did. And again, it's not a horrible movie. I just feel like it's a mess and kind of a bad movie that is getting a major pass for not being the worst movie ever made. That everybody was expecting a disaster, and it's not, and so then we're all propping it up as a success when, to me, it was still a bad mess.
I will admit that it's a mess because there's this thing that happens, and the tone and look of the film completely changes, and as it turns out, after I saw it, it was revealed that that's where the reshoots and the rewrites came in.
Yeah.
So you have this one thing that's on this massive scale.
Yeah.
I mean, zombies like ants turning
over buses.
It's
almost like
buses.
Place Beyond the Pines in the way that it's this upside-down triangle. And I don't mind a movie that gets smaller as it goes along.
And then suddenly a plane crashes, and it becomes this small, intimate, little Walking Dead thing.
Right.
But going in, I didn't really know what to expect, and I had heard nothing but negative things about it. So again, this might just be me being contrary. If everyone likes it, well, I have to hate it. And if everyone hates it, well, I'll find something to love.
Sure.
A
ton of people liked it. Great, good reviews.
And I'm not...
Tons of box office.
I'm not saying it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a great movie at all. I was entertained by it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we go to an overdose of testosterone.
Okay.
And, like, I have pig shit in one hand and cow shit in the other. Which of these two films was worse? Pain and Gain.
Okay.
Which, when we saw it, I saw it with you.
Yeah.
you know, we just thought, well, wow, that's just so unpleasant in so many different ways.
Yes.
But then, and this barely ever happens, I had a whole bunch of students see it and think exactly the same thing. That was really messed up. Like, wow, that film has a lot of creepy attitudes about things.
Yes.
And then not too long after that, I saw Two Guns.
Okay.
Which is a film that has an idea in its head about American masculinity that's just... Michael Bay could have made it. You become friends with someone by shooting them in the leg.
Right.
That's how you show affection, because you're so screwed up, because your entire notion of masculinity is based on watching American action movie.
Two Guns I wouldn't have put on my overrated list just because it's like a movie everybody forgot.
Yeah.
And Pain and Gain, amazingly, has started showing up on some top 10 lists.
Why? Because they only saw 9 movies?
No, and Adam Riske kind of called it in one of the columns or in a comment where he was saying that some critics, they'll have 9 movies that are tiny and foreign and that you've never heard of, and then they throw Pain and Gain in there to either show that,
yeah,
A, they're still populist, or B, that they see something in what you write off as trash as art.
So in the same way that Scorsese is critiquing the go-go Wall Street lifestyle that led to the economic collapse, these critics are making the case that Pain and Gain is actually critiquing the nonsense it's reveling in?
Yes.
I think that's a pretty hard case to make.
It is, having seen the movie. Going into the movie, I thought there was a chance that it could be that thing, that if Michael Bay was just a little bit more self-aware, he could use his aesthetic to make that movie.
That their contempt for anyone who's not fit and pumped up would be the object of ridicule.
Right.
But it's clear that the filmmakers agree with the protagonist.
Yes, the movie hates everyone and everything.
Yeah.
It is an ugly, ugly shit movie. I'm not a fan of Pain and Gain. What else do I have? Listen, I'm not very passionate about some of these. The Way, Way Back.
Yeah, I actually lump that together with The Spectacular Now, that we now have this niche of the indie film that's not really indie.
Right.
Everything is going to be like Little Miss Sunshine, because that's what people want who go to see these things. And I'm not saying that there weren't individual scenes in those two films that worked, kind of, as was discussed just recently on the website. There's stuff in The Spectacular Now that works, mostly Shannon Woodley's performance, but the film willfully ignores it. I would like to see a film about the relationship of the Sam Rockwell character and the...
Maya Rudolph?
I would like that to be the movie.
Yeah.
How their courtship has gotten here. Because the minute you start thinking about The Way, Way Back, it just makes no goddamn sense at all.
Yeah, The Spectacular Now, to me, is...
It doesn't take place on Earth.
No. Spectacular Now is problematic, but has greatness in it. Yes. I really think that. Way, Way Back, I don't think has anything going for it, except a lot of actors I like.
So your mother would willfully date a guy who would ask you on a long car trip, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate yourself, and then tell you you're a 3.
And supposedly that comes from one of the screenwriters' real life. So we're not allowed to call bullshit on that.
But here's the big bullshit. I don't care how much your parents love or don't love you. You cannot go with them to the summer retreat and get a summer job that they are not aware of.
And what? And why?
You've been here? You're the employee of the month? Hey, your kid's really great. It was nice to see Sam Rockwell pretend to be Bill Murray in Meatballs, though.
But just from a different movie. It's so bizarre. I did not like any... There were a bunch of actors I liked stranded in a movie that just did not know what it was doing.
The one thing I liked, and it's in the trailer, and I'm sorry. I'm unapologetic
By the way, I had not seen a single trailer. I went into that movie knowing zero. I thought it was about people stuck in a car.
The stand-up comedian who's one of the pool employees.
Okay.
How he sits there at the top of the water slide and has the pretty girls hold.
Right.
Hold. Right. I thought that was funny. That seemed to be someone who had worked at one of those places.
Right.
And how about a whole bunch of stuff about what it's like to work at one of those places, which we really don't get.
Adventureland was kind of that movie, I thought.
that it had more of what is it actually like to work here,
right.
And are these hot dogs stale, and can we still sell them?
Exactly. I mean,
I'm glad that you have that on your list, because I really did too.
Scene, I just, that kid was just such a mope, and why would anyone want to like him?
Those black people are breakdancing. They have to stop that right now. This will be good fun. And then, we'll leave if you dance.
Yeah, the whole thing was all just screenwriter conceit
because in real life there would have been gunplay.
not a fan.
And I think this pretty much wraps up Overrated.
Okay, should we move into
it's dark.
The real shit? And again, you know, when people name Man of Steel as one of the worst movies of the year, I just think they're talking out their ass, because
it's not on my list.
Boy, it doesn't compare to the movies that are on my worst list.
Although, before we get to our list of the worst movies, yes. I do want to bring this up. It doesn't even belong on the list of worst movies, because, again, my comment has been, since I saw it, one of the few people who saw it, it's not even a movie. It's not. I don't know what it is. Lost Vegas.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
Is beyond A Place Beyond the Pines. This is a movie that's beyond bad. And look at the cast.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm a man who's quickly approaching a certain age. There's a movie there.
Yeah.
There's a movie there. Recently I reconnected with two old friends from high school, and there's a movie there. But this is just every contrivance. They're at the Aria Hotel in Vegas, and you get the feeling that the public relations guy for the Aria got to rewrite the script. isn't it fun to get bottle service,
and
you can do this. And at one point, the three of them pretend to be gangsters, and then this 20-something guy, becomes their butler for the weekend, because he's afraid that they're going to have him killed.
The only thing that movie was missing is Robin Williams. It's a whole genre of movies. You have the bucket list and old dogs and
it's
wild
proof
hogs.
That they're not making movies for a certain age group.
Right.
I've exhausted this because I thought
Space Cowboys.
I thought, for just a second, I thought that was the joke title I had come up with for that movie.
You would
that
think, really but no, called it's called Space else. Cowboys.
That they're not making movies for a certain segment of the audience, and I was amazed. I think it's gone now. Lost Vegas stayed in theaters
yeah.
a really long time.
Yeah.
Because it takes, you know, Aunt Sophie told me that it was just the funniest thing. And the weird thing is, it's obviously being sold as a comedy. I get the feeling that the original script maybe wasn't a comedy at all.
Okay.
Because there's all this real pain and heartache in the film. De Niro's lost his wife and can't get over it.
Oh, sorry.
Morgan Freeman has some health problems, and so his son doesn't know how to deal with it and treats his father very condescendingly because... none of this is explored in any way, like human beings, like... Well, you're my father, and I love you, and I don't know how to express that love, and it scares the shit out of me that you might die. So now I'm treating you like a child, and there's that.
Right.
Kevin Kline's wife gives him permission to go to Vegas and have sex. So there's all these Viagra and Trojan jokes. One is worse than the next. Michael Douglas is playing himself, and it's really creepy. He's this old guy who really likes young ladies, and he's getting on, and he's starting to get that emaciated
lizard.
And I think it was after he had his health problems, so it was it doesn't take place on Earth. Oh, here's the biggest thing. They go to this little lounge, and there's this woman singing. She's singing in this little lounge. And I don't even think those lounges exist anymore, so that's from the 60s. Maybe they do. I've never seen them. And it's Francis... it's Mary Steenburgen.
Oh, okay.
And I'm confusing Mary Steenburgen with Francis Sternhagen.
Oh.
And she falls for one of them, and so... I guess quits her job because she's along for the merry parade of nonsense. And
it's
beyond bad. What are other films that made you cry this year?
Oh, gosh. It's a toss-up for me for worst movie of the year. Machete Kills, I think, is definitely in the running for being the worst movie
of the year. Which I avoided because you and Adam saw it and put out the word.
It's just so bad, and I say this as somebody who loved Grindhouse, who likes some of these fake exploitation movies, who enjoyed the first Machete enough. You know, it's not perfect, but there was enough to like in it that I had fun. And it's interesting because the movie starts with that Coming Attractions song. Yeah. And I turned to Adam and I said, this is my favorite movie of the year. And then as soon as that 15-second piece of music ends, it becomes the worst movie of the year. Astonishingly terrible that movie was. That and Kick-Ass 2, I feel like, are kind of in the running for worst movie of the year. And again, to anybody who says Man of Steel is the worst movie of the year, you did not see Kick-Ass 2.
And I think it was you who first said this. When Kick-Ass came out, it was very misunderstood, and I know, I think Ebert took a shit on it. And,
he did.
Kick-Ass 2 is what everyone thought Kick-Ass was.
Yeah.
Kick-Ass 2 is when you take this sort of very difficult equation that's very hard to keep all these balls in the air, and you give it to someone who has no idea what they're doing, because Kick-Ass 2 is an ugly, offensive film.
Yes.
And I am not easily offended.
And a badly made one.
But I'm looking at my list, and it's impossible for me to juggle because they're bad in so many different ways.
Sure.
Anchorman 2, you go to see, and then halfway through Anchorman 2, you realize you don't want to see a sequel to Anchorman.
Yeah.
The Great Gatsby inflamed my ire so badly because I hold the book close to my heart that I wrote a column about it. You should all read it. It got high marks from other English teachers. And one of them even weighed in on the comment section.
Nice.
She couldn't figure out how to log in, so it's anonymous.
Sure.
But she was like, oh, and have you considered this? And then she gave, like, a more devastating critique of the film. The film gets this wrong. And so the whole thing doesn't make any sense that she was very... Pain and Gain was obnoxious and ugly. The Canyons was unnecessary.
The Canyons is on my list as well.
I had hope for Jobs. And Jobs is so bad. It's like it's made by someone who had a box over their head and is completely... and then this happened. And then it's what Film Crit Hulk says, ant plotting.
Right.
And then this happened.
Right.
And then this happened.
The Hobbit
and
has some
of
that.
We all know this happened. And I know you're not a fan of Josh Gad.
No.
But he's Wozniak in that.
Yeah.
And I thought... You had something there, completely thrown away and not done in the right way. But what leads Wozniak to quit, I thought you could have done something with.
Right.
Because why did we get into this, and what has it become? But in a weird way, they turned it into sort of a really ugly revenge story where... You saw Jobs, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
I saw the trailer, and I know I've said this before. If the trailer wasn't being played straight... It would be one of the best Funny or Die sketches ever made.
It very much, because we have this guy who's obviously a genius and who literally changed the world. So maybe we can explore that instead of saying, well, he did this in college, and then he did this.
Right.
And the filmmakers have such blinders on as to what people might be interested in or what might be artistic or actually say something about the human condition that... You're actually left with the fact that they believe it's a revenge story.
Right.
That didn't everyone see that he was a genius. And after he was kicked out of his own company, he came back and he cleared house. He fired all those people. And then he came up with an even greater invention and wound up with all the money.
Yeah.
So bad. And the movie's so bad that... Ashton Kutcher isn't the worst thing about it. I mean, you know, slap a beard on him and he kind of looks like Steve. And
another biopic that deserves mention, I think, is Lovelace,
which
was really, really awful, and which reminded me as I was watching it, I turned to my wife and said, without all the nudity and swearing, this is a Lifetime movie.
Right.
That's as much understanding as it has of Linda Lovelace's life, of her as a person. I think the movie is really... I think it it really misunderstands a lot of that. Oh, no, whole
I would
scene.
Say I would say if it's even worse than a Lifetime movie because the filmmakers want to have their cake and eat it too. Yeah. So we get the opening sequence. These people are so interesting, and pornography is fun. Right. And then
that's half the movie.
You can hear the record scratch.
Right,
she's being raped. What?
Yeah. Well, it does have.
So now
the movie.
You're going to spend an hour telling me that I was wrong.
Exactly.
To enjoy Hank Azaria in the first hour.
It's very weird. There's a whole scene where it's being played for laughs as they make jokes back and forth. It's such an ugly, shitty movie, and it's amazing that many talented people signed up to be in it.
Yeah.
Planes, which I know you did not see, an animated film that is so, so terrible, and luckily my son just got the Blu-ray for Christmas and now is watching it on repeat.
And I have to tell you, I was there when this gift was given.
Yeah.
And his reaction to opening that present...
He's excited.
...was like it was a pound of cocaine.
He's excited.
He jumped up and down.
Yeah.
He shouted the word planes over and over. But I've been lucky. I've been very lucky in my life. I've never seen Cars, yeah. Cars 2, or yeah. Planes.
Listen,
I've avoided those. So my image of Pixar?
Planes makes Cars and even Cars 2 seem like masterpieces. It really does. It's so, so bad. And the fact that, you know, Pixar isn't necessarily associated with it, except they keep saying from the world of Cars, and because Lasseter sort of oversees everything. But the fact that Disney
know how much Lasseter oversees.
Yes, the fact that Disney even put their name on it is an embarrassment. It's really garbage. Grown Ups 2, which I know you didn't see, and no one ever should. Let's stop subsidizing Adam Sandler's summers.
But it's too late because when I went to see Wolf of Wall Street, one of the trailers. I talk about a trailer seeming like a joke trailer.
Yeah.
Adam Sandler's next movie.
Blended.
Come on.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I remember the original title. It was like Family Moon or something. Like a play on Honeymoon that doesn't work at all. I think it was like Family Moon. I don't know.
After the trailer, my wife leaned over and said, "Does he even remember when he made Punch Drunk Love?"
Yeah. Clearly not. And that's the fucked up thing about watching funny people, is that movie suggests that Adam Sandler has total self-awareness about the kinds of movies.
We see these trailers, and I just think the same thing over and over. Merman.
Yeah.
It's Merman.
Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Go ahead, cuz. Do your thing.
Do your thing.
The Great Gatsby, Hyper Me into a Frenzy. We're the Millers.
Oh, I just saw that. Not one laugh in that movie. Not one.
Let's explore this. It's hard for me to come up with an adjective.
Yeah.
Again, like Las Vegas doesn't take place on Earth.
No.
Just so.
Yeah.
By the numbers and stupid and
very stupid and Jason Sudeikis should not be the lead of a movie.
No.
Especially a movie where we are supposed to like him by the end and find him sympathetic and be on board with his surrogate family.
Much
because
like,
he's a smug asshole for the entire movie.
Much like other actors we like who we've said would be much better in supporting roles. The thing I point to with Sudeikis, and you're not going to believe this, what's up with that? A sketch that I have now gone beyond being tired of on SNL because they repeat it so much. Jason Sudeikis plays this guy in a tracksuit who does this funny little dance. That's what he should be doing in movies. He should be adding the funny little dance.
Right.
He should just be a little condiment to the main, but just awful. And, oh, well, pretend to be my wife and you're a stripper and we can see where this is leading. And speaking of pornography, I don't even remember her name, the Friends girl.
Oh, Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
And what I'm thinking is her last two movies. Well, actually, her last three movies. She's kind of playing this game now where she's going to be more sexual than she was
she's
before.
She's edgy.
And in Horrible Bosses, it's just horrible and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And then in Wanderlust, the whole ending of the film,
yeah.
like, ooh, everyone's waiting to see her naked. No, we're really not.
No, I'm good.
And it's awful. What may have been the worst comedy of the year, and I guess I'm not alone in this, the incredible Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah, that was so forgettable to me.
Some website, though, published a list this year of the movies, how much they cost versus how much they made.
Yeah.
And Wonderstone made that list of return on your investment because yeah. no one went to see it.
I started watching that Ricky Jay documentary last night, and I haven't finished it yet, but it made me think of how wrong Burt Wonderstone got
and
so many things.
Ricky Jay on Netflix now?
It just showed up, yeah.
What I can't understand is that film was handled by Kino Lorber, which is an art house firm, and they also have a video label. It came out on DVD, but not Blu-ray.
Oh.
So.
Some movies do that now.
What the hell is that? That there's no Vistas of Wonder, so you can watch it in lower quality.
Yeah, as physical media.
What you've seen so far. Do you like it?
I like it. He's still talking about the mentors a lot, which is fine, but, like, I just want to watch him do shit. Like, I love listening to him talk.
That's one of the few things I would fault the film for.
Yeah.
I think if you really want listeners, if you really want a wonderful evening of entertainment, Ricky Jay is all over YouTube. One night, I think with my iPad, I just watched Ricky Jay. Because his most amazing thing, his most amazing stage show is called Ricky Jay and His 52 Assistants. And it played at the Steppenwolf. And because it was like in the upstairs theater, and it was very small, and the show had high production costs, it was incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
Plus, it was directed by David Mamet, so that had that cash. They later filmed it for HBO and then never put it out on DVD. You can watch the entire thing broken up into 9-minute segments yeah. on YouTube. And it's amazing. I wish they would release it legitimately so I could buy it.
Right.
Ricky Jay's the man.
Gangster Squad, I think.
Which I had almost forgotten. And I kind of liked it when I saw it. And then I was publicly shamed by Mr. Bromley into hating it. Although you were right. It's as awful as the day is long. And for whatever reason, I think because I had gone a month without seeing a movie,
yeah.
it was very much I'm at the movies.
Sure.
That phenomenon. But no, you're right. It's just...
And again, so many talented people and a great trailer, and I kind of had my hopes up, and I just think it's pretty terrible.
That, to me, seems like a Lifetime movie, where it's,
right.
it sounds like a gangster
it's
film.
It's informed
and it looks...
only by people who have seen other movies.
Exactly.
And then I guess the last one I'll mention is Inappropriate Comedy.
You saw that?
It's on Netflix, so I watched it.
Oh my god.
It is a movie. It is so just hateful and racist and homophobic and sexist. And to every critic who has put movie 43 on their list of the worst movies of the year, I would contend that none of them saw Inappropriate Comedy, because movie 43 is not good, but I laughed a couple of times.
I hated movie 43, but there's a thing in the middle where they suggest that some high-tech gadgets like Xerox machines actually have children inside of them to make them work. I'm sorry, that was inspired
yeah.
and short
yeah.
and very funny.
It is
much
funny.
Funnier than that sex doll MP3 player.
Yeah, no, there's so much in the movie that is not good, but it's light years better than Inappropriate Comedy.
And should we talk about The Lone Ranger again?
I would not say that's one of the worst movies of the year.
Maybe because my expectations were so high
yeah.
because I was a big Lone Ranger fan.
Getting a huge reassessment, too. Showing yeah. up on a ton of underrated lists. And boy, I want to like it. I want to like see the things in it that other people are seeing.
I think that movie hates the Lone Ranger.
It kind of
does. And hates Tonto even more.
Yeah, maybe if there was less stupid bickering between them, I could like the movie more.
Here's some advice for Johnny Depp. One of your more successful performances was as Ed Wood in Ed Wood. And I would argue that that's a performance that's free of irony
yeah.
that makes it work.
Yeah.
Maybe you could get away in the new issue of Esquire. Steve Coogan said, we are now so mired in unnecessary irony that one of the boldest most revolutionary things you can do these days is be sincere.
Yeah.
I would like to see a sincere Tonto, and that maybe the film could be about how they became such friends and,
right.
and started to watch each other's back.
I want to see that movie.
Instead of this straight arrow guy who's out of his element and this schizophrenic.
Right.
I don't know what audience they're trying
to people they keep arguing that
besides mental patients.
They keep arguing that it's very subversive, that it's a critique of American history. I don't know. The two train sequences are so good that I couldn't call it one of the worst movies of the year. And it's beautiful.
I think the problem is, and again, this goes back to my childhood, don't mess with my childhood, that it's trying to be subversive about something that resists
right.
your subversion.
Right.
It's the Lone Ranger.
Right. Have you seen the trailer for Jupiter Ascending yet?
No.
Okay. It's the new Wachowskis movie. That Steve Coogan quote made me think of it, because this is something I thought about with Cloud Atlas last year, and now that I'm thinking
about it.
That
it was willing to be genuine, and it's...
That their bread and butter is utter sincerity, and when the Jupiter Ascending trailer played, maybe before Wolf of Wall Street, it gets laughs, because it's silly. Channing Tatum has, like, weird little wolf ears, and it's very science fiction-y, but it's very sincere, and I think people don't know what to make of that, because they want something that's either goofy or kind of dark and gritty, but not something that's full of optimism and hope and willing to be seen as silly in order to put its heart on the line the way that Cloud Atlas did. I don't know. We'll see next summer, I guess.
I'm looking at my list of 10 best movies,
yes.
which I will not reveal until next week.
No.
And I'm thinking about what we're talking about, because I tend to think about what we talk about.
I appreciate
as we talk about it, that one of the themes of a lot of the movies I liked this year was that they were sort of hopeful and genuine, although often in subverted ways.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. Lots of suggestions for stuff to watch, lots of suggestions for stuff to avoid, and some things you may want to argue about us with.
Also, I wanted to mention Happy New Year. Yeah, a Happy New Year.
Yes.
And we recently celebrated our 200th podcast, and this morning I was thinking that if you've been with us since the beginning, or if you've joined us at some point and caught up, you have now spent about 2 days of your life listening to us and sharing with us about these movies, and I don't think we take that for granted.
No.
That my former principal used to say, it's easy to get people to give money. It's very hard to get people to give up their time. And time is becoming the currency of the 21st century. So we really appreciate all of you spending your time with us.
Well spoken. Thanks again for listening. Happy New Year. And we'll talk to you guys next week with our list of the 10 best movies of 2013.
Great stuff.
Bye.